My great great uncle, my father, he burned what I saw. Not my son, not
his
friend.
I didn't
see it. No, no.
Oh, you know. 3 o'clock in
the morning. 3 o'clock in the
morning. And I was there until. Well, I was asked to move.
It looks pretty big bomb.
It's a bomb?
Big bomb.
Loaded into the barn. They're all about that long. And they didn't move the cutter. I brought all this heavy stuff, flowed right in the middle of the barn. All the stuff was in the little thing of the world. And the calf goes on the side. If they would have moved that sideways and mixed that heavy wet stuff, that wasn't dry. This got with the dry stuff. It wouldn't have happened. But it's all right in one spot, right in the middle. And underneath that was a grinder. And the grinder was empty. And Milka got out, happened to wake up a little that morning. He said he woke up about 10 minutes earlier, or 30 minutes earlier, and he got up. And the grinder door was open, right in the middle of the barn, and he said the fire was falling through, it burned a hole through the ceiling of the barn, and the hay was falling down into the grinder on the floor.
Oh my goodness. Well, it was really
hot, the sparks, you know, it burst through the floor, and their water, they couldn't have done it anyway, but anyway, right at that time, the well water, the pump was on the bone, and had part of the pump here in town getting it fixed. A little 5 miles north here. So, they called me up, and I went out alone. I always went alone out in the country. I never waited for anybody to come. Just a waste of time. And I think it was about 4 in the afternoon when I finally came back. But, I took a run up there with a country truck that I built. And he took a hole, going off about as big as a finger, and got in that hole and just went around it, and there it was all black. It was just a red coal in there when I went in. And I put around in there and put in quite a bit of water and took it good. And Art, he says, Art Connell, he says, well, I said, I guess you got it. And I said, got it, that ain't started. I said, you're going to have to get a bunch of neighbors here with the teams and wagons and cut a hole in the side of the barn and haul that hay out in the field. If you don't, you're going to lose your barn. And I've been out several times before, so I knew about what he had to do. So they got some light and he called up and he had plenty of help. And they just drove up and they built racks on the side because the stuff wouldn't pile up, you know, and to haul it. And they hauled it out in the barn and emptied it and come back and had two, three wagons. So they kept going there and so many in there shoveling us out, they had wide scoops. And along in the afternoon, they had two little holders there. Had the two garden holders on the truck. I had four holders on there. And I had two small holders. And I stayed in there and tried to watch it. If there was any fire there, but I just put like a garden hose, you know, just pull out a small red pencil and put water on that. And the guys, you know, it's the hot in there, they would take and grab this nozzle and cross it down their shoes. It's just so hot that they just put it burn up. And they all had anchors over their face, you know, because of the gas and that stuff. And after they hauled it out of the barn along the afternoon, why, this stuff caught fire out in the field. It was still, everything was hot, everything was steaming hot. So it caught fire and burned out in the field.
Could you explain to them why hay and this type of thing burns?
Oh, there's a lot of barns like today, and they don't know here why they burn. You take the hay that's put in wet, green, not wet. Red hay don't get hot. But green hay with the gas in there of the growing plants. Well, you take a cut grass in the summertime. You just dump it on a pile from the lawn, and it'll be steam from all that.
And then you're saying that,
if you've got quite a pile and you stick your hand in the middle there, you can't hold in there. It's too hot. Well, in a barn, there's no ventilation, you see. You just hold that heat in. If you've got a little pile of grass out there, of course, it gets plenty of air. Pine tall's out here, right back in the greenhouse, you know, place back in there. There was the first large folks. They had three bonfires. Caught some wet hay, and they didn't watch it, and I tried to tell them. You couldn't tell them anything. Oh, it'll be all right. Then go in the middle of the night, and during the starts at night because the air is heavy. And at that time of year, there was a lot of breeze like there is now, and the air is heavy that way, and that seems like that for a second. After course, so I had I'm trying to find it, but I'm going to get away from me. That room. This was a Hawthorne office. It was March of 22. We bought this truck. So we had a dance the rest of the year, and then when I went out in the country, and well, later on, you know, out in the country, and a lot of times I was sending a donation text to the fire department. So in March 22, when I bought this truck, he took this body off the horse door rig, and now they're on here in March 22.
So now this was a horse drawn
rig,
and they just put it on top of
the
truck.
I tried all over, I don't know the horse drawn rig and the team had a nice picture of that, that size, but it got away from me somewhere. I don't know if they got it up the fire hall or if I took it from the museum. One of the other.
Maybe when we go up to the fire hall, maybe it'll be there. It might be at the fire hall. So.
Well, they did want some of the stuff there.
Now, this is really converting it, wasn't it? The horse drawn one, you just put
right on
top. You built this one, you built this yourself. Did you build this yourself,
Louis? Oh, that truck? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we bought a second-hand truck and we changed it over right in the fire hall. It didn't cost the city a dime. There's only two, there's only one more nail, so that's the last one. Mm-hmm. You used to have a grocery store here?
Yeah.
He's still alive. And yourself. I'm the driver. The Holy Trinity flesh.
This Mr. Elk was in the hospital because he was ill, so he couldn't talk to us. But he lives not too far from him in school. You didn't want to know if this was your uniform when you fought fires.
We didn't have, we had the pants, pants, line pants for the winter time. So there's lined with like a carpet inside, and there's brown pants, you know, because you know, for instance, here I was talking to anybody, just right through the, there were no buildings, I'd go right through here, and the fall thing at night was, I had these pants hanging in the hall, and I just got these down and had a pair of shoes with elastic on the side, and that's all, no matter how cold it was or anything. And I had a regular torn out coat, canvas coat.
Was there anyone at the fire hall, or did the bell just ring and you go to the fire hall?
Well, you mean the coat?
No, was there anyone at the fire hall?
Well, there was. There was one fellow lived upstairs. But if they could take care of the calls after, after 1920, they didn't share the calls, came in the room and heard the phone. And I never stopped to call anybody. I just went after I built this truck, after 20 years, and I built that truck by, I just get over there and go.
See, you're the only paid fireman, right?
There were 15, it was paid 2.5 a month.
2.5 a month.
I joined in September 6, 1916. But they had a volunteer system that there were 15 men. The city allowed 15 men at $2.50.
A month.
A month.
2.5 a month.
When I started drawing, of course, before that, a long time they didn't get anything. I don't know if it's when they started that 2.5 months. But they would be what they call extra lists. Anybody on the drawing, even their own expedition, was just drawing something, moved on the town or something happened, and it dropped off. Move up. And I was on the extra list for the whole 2 years before I got the $2.50.
So there was others that were free. They were down below this. Did it just a big bell ring? Was it just a big siren that rang to let the volunteers?
Yeah, there's two sirens. They're still up there. They follow the name of Will Morgan. He was the cashier of the Shoot Bank. He invented the siren set on end. That the worst gun was in the country. And they built that in Portland and they bought it out here. And I forget now, as long as 1912, 14, something like that. Because I know they set it on the sidewalk and took electricity to it, and when that thing ran, it just sent it to a party that had old ears because it just stinged. It was just stinging ears, you know, just close to it. I did it sure did very good service. It's still working good. It's a low tone one that they go now, if you ever hear it.
It's still there
today. See, they have two. That high pitched siren, it just goes up and stays there by that just put in by the government during the war. That was supposed to be their air raid siren. And they just left it there. But that low pitch one, that's the one that goes up and down.
And
that was put in about 1915, did you say it was put in? 1915, or was it later than that? The siren?
Yeah.
Oh, no, that was put in there by 1912.
About 1912. And so all the firemen, all the volunteers would just find out where the fire was and go. The fire. They dropped whatever they were doing and went. They hoped. Even brushing their teeth.
Well, before they got the farm, they had a bell that put the museum. It had two ropes on it. So that was littered up on top.
So it was bell that put the sign.
And then this Will Barnum, he invented a hammer to hit this bell, electric hammer. And when that went over and hit, all the lights in town would because they made no electricity up there at that time. They had no wire come in town. Had an electric plant up there for the parking lot. It was now right back to the Basket Church. Mm-hmm. That's where they got the water. They had a big well there. They pumped the water up into a tower 100 feet high. That's how they got the water.
The
electricity, but there wasn't enough electricity in Hill for the great, a small amount of electricity. They had a steam plant up there, the dining room. And an old fellow for years, after 1905, an old man by the name of Stevens, Sam Stevens, he was an old railroad engineer. He ran this plant at night. They'd go to work at 5 o'clock or whatever it was, but he does. They blow the whistle.
And then you had electricity, right? So you see, you didn't have it during the day, you had it at night. You would go down, start up the plant, you blow a whistle, and everybody knew you had
electricity. Well, they'd always blow the whistle ahead, so if anybody's working on it, because they would be notified.
You notified that
you
were going to turn the electricity on for the night.
The edge of town at that time was down by the park, 10th Street. That was the end of it. That's the end of the city at that time. We were on this side of this side of 10th Street was the city and the other side was the country. And then in the morning when it got short, got daylight, the people could see why he cut it off, he cut it off the home. There was no electricity all day.
Didn't need electricity in
the
daytime.
Then the good old days.
Oh, you needed it at night. Because you didn't have so many things to run away. Mostly light was all they had.
Oh yes, that's about all they had. But I don't know when they brought the electricity in town really, because I worked up here in the store for 4 years over near the John Connell. He got to be sheriff. He was sheriff before that, and he was afterwards. And I've been deputy, and I've done everything. I've still got my deputy sheriff.
Oh, do you?
But then they had an ice machine there and cold storage plant. And he runs a cold storage plant just like the refrigerator now. In 1915, I bought this place, this lot in 1915. And the same year, I bought the ice building for the other guy, and I had that for 3, 4 years, 3.5 years. I bought my ice of cork gold. I hauled some of it on an old automobile. And some of it I had a gray wagon up there and get it. And where my garage is, I bought an ice house and I moved that in here. And it was sawdust about that deep. The body was filled with sawdust and gores on that, and they kept the ice on there. The walls were
lined. Explain to them what an ice house is. I don't think they know what an ice house is.
Well, an ice house was about, maybe 10 feet square.
It was a small building, about 10 feet square.
And the walls were about 6 inches thick, lined inside and out with lumber, and they filled out with sawdust.
They put ice in it then.
Then you get a load of ice and put it in there, and you had a door that was, the door was fit on the slope. It wasn't straight, so when you put it shut, it was tight all over. And then it had an iron lever. When you put that down, it squeezed that door shut. But you couldn't keep it very long. You had to get your new load packed and everything. And the butcher boxes, they had the big refrigerators. They were probably bunch of 8 feet long, maybe 6 feet wide. And there I could put over the top. And for years I packed 100 pounds of ice on my shoulder, walk up the ladder, pile in there, and pile up any food. If you didn't pile a pool, it wouldn't last for long, then they'd give you a little pool.
I'll do it again. Thanks, Jeffrey.
Oh, they have a pole by the window, huh?
Pole.
The lodging.
Oh, fire pole. He wants to know if they had a fire pole.
No, there was no upstairs to it. There was just a room downstairs. There was no fire pole. So. The man lived upstairs, but there was a stair over there. He was full of clean streets. At that time, there was no cement walks, hardly any. All board walks would have to replace boards and stuff like that.
He replaced all the boards on the walk and kept the streets
up. In 1905, when I moved to town, there was only one little piece of cement, and that's for the economy drug room at the Trimmer's store. And around the corner, down this way, there was a cement sidewalk. So this little way as far as their store went, the rest was all wood.
All wood sidewalks.
And all wooden planks in the streets.
And the wooden planks in the streets. And that was, because they didn't always have wooden planks in the streets. That was, you said mud streets.
And in the wintertime, I had a motorcycle in 1910, the first one in college.
What is that?
And in the wintertime, if you run over these planks, they'd float because the water would be under. There were no shores at that time. And there was no street shore. And these planks would go on water, and when you hit that, with a sheet of water fly out between the planks.
You know,
that
in a motorcycle in
1910? Yeah, I'm trying to say. Because here, I bought this lot in 1915, and August 1915, and the city, the year before, had just put in the cement sidewalk here. I didn't do it long ago. Wouldn't seem to you, but
yeah, not to you, huh?
I know because when I bought the lot, in 1911 they put in the shore system, the main part of town. And there was nothing paid on the shore, and I had paid for the sidewalk. Believe it or not, the lot was 100 feet square. It took in over in here. I just got half, went that much further over. There was another house right here. And
how much did you have to pay for your lot here? How much did you pay?
$500.
$500.
And there was part of the schoolhouse
on it. $500
for all his land here. He got part of the schoolhouse on it for $500. Yeah. I lived in the old schoolhouse, the building. Well, there were 2 bedrooms on that side, and the living room here. And then it would set out back. And we lived in that in 1921. Then I worked as night officer for the city for 9 years, every night. Sometimes, there was one time, 3 years stretch I ever laid off a night.
Wow.
Couldn't afford to. It was at $105
a month. $105 a month? Does it work every night?
$105. You have any questions? You have any questions? My favorite question? No? And this house I built, this is 21. I built it all myself. And I'll tell you, there isn't a thing you look at that anybody drove in there. I couldn't afford to hire anybody, and I had done it all myself. I'd done the papering and made the building later on, and had different buildings being done. My favorite several times. I did it all.
Well,
And you know, after having that storm around 62, you'd think that the house was moved enough to crack the pressure. But this hasn't been taken since you walk in any one of those rooms. Mm-hmm. You can't find a crack in it.
Okay,
I'd really be scared.
How did they fight the fire before you got the fire engine?
They had a two-wheel car. And you remember Drug Streets had tires left over the sidewalk that was lined up and on the sidewalk. But there were very few sidewalks that lined up. This car was just about the same width as the Rhino, not quite as wide. And that had the holes on there, about 800 feet of holes. That was 2 blocks. And it had handles were out on it. A couple parts would hang off the handles, and then they had a rope that was on the windlass on there, and you pull out whatever amount of rope, how many fellows was there to help pull. And then they had a catch me, put this dog in, I'd hold it, and then they'd pull it and pull it to the back there. They had a short tongue. The tongue was really too short. Because if you hit something like you, sometimes it pulls you right over the butt. You happen to take a hole and it dropped down and hit something and you swing right around. You just couldn't hang on to it.
You'd have to pull.
And I'd pull it by hand.
After each fire, did you guys have to clean up the fires? Did you have to clean up after a fire? Was it your job to clean up after the fire?
No, we didn't do anything yet. Not that time. Not for later on later.
You got to the people
that came out. Yeah. After all, most everybody, if there's a fire of any size, everybody went to it. Everything was kind of closed up. Because everybody was interested in it, you know, and really needed the help. And they had another little four-wheeled wagon for a lighter truck. They had a couple of lighters on there. They was about 24 feet long.
Did you pull that by hand?
Everything went by hand.
Everything went by hand.
Then later on, all along 1910 along there, the city published it that they would pay. They had a couple of big gray wagons, and all the freight come by S Street train at that time down here at the foot of First Street. And they hauled the freight up to there with gray wagons. If you'd done any moving with these gray wagons, and the city published that the first gray wagon, the fire alarm came in, and the first wagon that came to the fire hall, they were paying $2.50. And if there was a rig that you sit down in, you take the tongue of this truck and put it on the end gate and hang on to it a couple of years, put the feet of it in the end gate and hang on to it, and then they'd run to the park.
Tell them what a gray wagon is. They don't know what a gray wagon is. Do you know what a gray wagon is?
Never heard
of a gray wagon.
Well, you've probably seen a picture sometime or another. I don't have any of them. But, they had a good sized box, two big wheels in the back, and in front there was smaller wheels, lower. They was only about that high because when the box stopped in front, there was some heavy iron that went over this way. And you had a, of course, it was pulled by two. And the small wheels would turn right under this thing. In other words, you could have a team facing out this way. If you want to start out, and you're out, well, you just turn the key around and these wheels would go underneath you. I got on the side of it.
Well,
They didn't have to back up or anything like that.
They carried freight, I mean, they were freight wagons.
All the freight was hauled from the depot down here, shipped in by us through train and hauled in.
They were wagons. They didn't have any way of carrying the freight. They trucks take their place. These were freight wagons. There were gray lines there. That was the name of them. They're like a Haney truck. Wouldn't you like the Haney truck?
Oh, yeah. Like there was horse-drawn and small, they were small wagons. The body of the truck was about as large as it was.
So when the fire rang, the first one was gray wagon said to get down to pick everybody up. They got paid, right?
The hose wagon was the only one. The rest of the stuff was hauled by hand. But the hose wagon, that's the one that really needed to get there, they took water to it.
And they went by horse.
And the rest of them, they if they needed the lighters, why they pulled them by hand, because that was all big wheels and not heavy. That hose gets to be awful heavy. 800 feet of hose, that'd be 16 lengths of hose, and that would weigh right on 50 pounds the length. That'd be 800 pounds on these two little wheels.
When you got the wagon, did you have to have a horse before?
Yes, and that's what I tried to find out. They had a team there on this wagon here. It was right in the back, behind it.